The Youth's Instructor, May 25, 1899. The Resurrection of Lazarus, Part 9. The Youth's Instructor, May 25, 1899. The Resurrection of Lazarus, Part 9. At this council, Christ's enemies had been deeply convicted. The Holy Spirit had impressed their minds, but Satan strove to gain control over them. He urged upon their notice the grievances they had suffered on account of Christ. How little he had honored their righteousness! He had presented a righteousness far greater, which all must possess who would be children of God. Taking no notice of their forms and ceremonies, he had made the service of God so simple that sinners were encouraged to go directly to God as to a merciful Father and make their wants known to him. Thus, in their opinion, Christ had set aside the priesthood. He had refused to acknowledge the theology of the rabbinical schools. He had exposed the evil practices of the priests and had irreparably hurt their influence. He had injured the effect of their maxims and traditions, declaring that, though they strictly enforced the ritual law, they made the law of God void by their traditions. He had accused them of being ignorant of the Scriptures and of the power of God, denouncing them as hypocrites. This Satan now brought to their minds, persuading them that they had a quarrel against Jesus, which nothing but his death could end. Satan told them that in order to save their authority, they must put Jesus to death. This counsel they followed. The fact that they might lose the power they then exercised was, they thought, sufficient reason for coming to some decision. With the exception of a few who dared not speak their minds, the Sanhedrin received the words of the high priest as the words of God. Relief came to the council. The discord ceased. They resolved to put Christ to death at the first favorable opportunity. In coming to this shameful decision, they eased their minds with the fact that many guiltless lives had been sacrificed to save others. The rulers were well pleased with themselves. They regarded themselves as patriots who were seeking the nation's salvation. Thus, they persuaded themselves that they would be doing God a service in apprehending Christ. They thought that by putting him to death, they could avert danger and preserve their power. Every device possible was to be tried to find something whereby Christ could be represented as working against the Roman power. By putting spies on his track, who would profess to be honest inquirers after truth, they hoped to entrap him. Thus, by their own course of action, they demonstrated as true all that Jesus had said of their malignity. This spirit had been worked out in the history of Daniel. His enemies, who hated the faithful statesman for his integrity, and who wished to remove him from their path that they might rise to eminence, planned and intrigued long in order to find some way by which he might be condemned and put to death. By deciding to murder the Son of God, the Jewish rulers forged the fetters that were to hold them in irrevocable bondage. They loaded the cloud of vengeance that was soon to break over them, leaving them divorced from God and a prey to their enemies. From the time of this decision, the protection of God was withdrawn from the Jewish nation. The restraint of His Holy Spirit was removed. Christ's act in raising Lazarus was the crowning act of his life. What an influence for good it should have had upon all! But the hearts of the priests were hardened by it. Heaven's light was shining upon them. The evidence was strong enough to lead them out of the dark shadow in which the enemy had enveloped them. But the words were verified. Though he had done so many miracles before them, yet they believed not on him. Because that Esaias said again, "He hath blinded their eyes and hardened their heart, that they should not see with their eyes, nor understand with their heart, and be converted, and I should heal them." God never hardens the heart in any other way than by giving great light. Heaven's favors slighted, turned from, rejected, because of a perverse will, hardened the heart. So Pharaoh's heart was hardened. In order to accomplish his purpose, the Lord continued to give him greater and still greater manifestations of his power. But the king's first resistance made obedience to God more difficult. To refuse first and then obey is humiliating. God did not actually make Pharaoh stubborn and unyielding. He continued to give him light, and the king's increasing stubbornness brought its sure result. By resisting the will of God, seeds of disobedience are sown, and a harvest of evil is reaped. One seed of unbelief generates another and a stronger seed. By submission to the will of God, seeds are sown that will produce a rich harvest of good. The seed that is sown is the seed reaped, for seed reproduces itself. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. As responsible agents, all are deciding for themselves what their harvest shall be. God never urges anyone on in wickedness. He never leads man to become desperate in his rebellion. He will not that any should perish, but that all should be saved. But he forces no one to accept the light. If, after bearing long with man, God sees that he will not submit, he leaves him to work out his natural hatred. He gives him up to the worst of all tyrants, self. From those who will not see the light, who are determined to go on in the hardness of their hearts, God gradually withdraws the restraining power of his grace. Today, as in the days when Christ worked his wonderful miracles, the truth of God is made known. Men have within themselves the evidence of its divinity. The Holy Spirit impresses their minds by the manifestation of divine power. If received, the light sent from God leads to freedom, life, and salvation. But if by resistance preconceived opinions are strengthened, if the God-given blessing is not received, the light becomes darkness.